All right.
All righty.
And we're here. We're on the deck.
Good to be back.
Look at this view. Look at this.
This is my favorite view ever. First time I ever visited Los Angeles, I was in Seattle, but I'd never seen like something about LA. And then I remember being stunned.
I know. I mean, well, I remember the day they put up this fucking wire right here. This wire came up about 5 years ago.
I bet Bev.
Oh, my mom was screaming at fucking the electricians or whoever, the city of LA, and she was saying like, "I'll cut it, I'll cut it tonight."
I remember they put like a stop sign up, and she was like, "I don't want to. I'm not stopping here."
No, yeah. They've done a lot of things in this neighborhood, and my mom is the reason that there's two speed bumps on our street. Because she just fought for years to get speed bumps because people would just fly up our street.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
I think it's that. And then she also is responsible for there's a no left turn between like 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. up the street. It's like a major intersection.
She went to city councils.
She got it done 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. So she did that, right? So there wouldn't be as much cut through traffic on our street to get to the freeway. So she does that, right? Within 2-3 months of it being implemented, my dad and I have racked up like thousands of dollars in tickets.
Oh, Jesus.
Through that.
Yeah.
Because we would go to school or work or whatever, and we're trying to make a left that we've made our whole lives, yeah. And then we just keep getting... My mom basically was bankrupting us by getting the law implemented. We would come home and be like, yeah, I wonder who got this in there. I have an $800 ticket now.
Sweet Bev, I mean, listen, anything she wants, I'm happy.
The greatest woman of all time.
If I'm the mayor and
my
Bev
mother.
Comes to me, and she could say, like, let's legalize dog fighting. Oh, yeah, you're done.
I would do anything my mom says, you know, except a lot of things.
except for every
except
single
for
thing
every
she
single
has.
Thing I've avoided doing. Have you seen this show? I want to talk. If you know that they're doing the People versus shows that like Ryan Murphy does. He did the Gianni Versace did the OJ one. Have you know that there's a Hillary Clinton
J-Lo
Monica Lewinsky one?
I didn't see it, but
called impeachment.
J-Lo, is it out?
It's out. I watched the first episode the other night, and it's good. Like, you know how his style's very like it's very like melodramatic, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's they're good times. The one problem with the show is that they have decided to have Monica Lewinsky be played by Jonah Hill. It's a little odd. Jonah Hill's, you know, no offense, but kind of offense. Jonah Hill's sister is playing Monica Lewinsky.
I mean, come on. Listen, Monica wasn't a 10.
She wasn't. But
she wasn't a 10.
But she was hot in that ugly but not
she
fat
She certainly
way.
Wasn't Jonah Hill.
She's
sister.
Not
yeah.
Beanie Feldstein or what. Okay, they got Jiminy Glick playing Monica Lewinsky. It completely takes you out of the show. And then there's a whole scene where, like, Linda Tripp keeps talking about what a knockout she is.
You can't change the script if you're going to cast her.
It's just so confusing. Somebody was obviously owed a favor in Hollywood, I think.
I thought you were going to say there's one big problem with the show. They cut out the whole Pizzagate stuff.
That is another thing I'm a little disappointed in. But they do have one scene where they go, where Linda Tripp says something about, like, she's like, oh, all the pizza parties I've been to around here.
Oh, a little hint.
And in my mind, I was like, I am on your side, Linda. I hear you.
I bet there is a 4chan thread about that.
Episode 2 better be them just looking through emails being like, pizza must mean little boy. And hot dog must mean little girl. And
it rapidly shifts into Linda Tripp investigating Pizzagate.
It just turns into a Pizzagate show. But yeah, I kind of couldn't believe that.
Who
casting.
Needs 10,000 pizzas? That's Linda Tripp.
Do you remember the Lewinsky thing? How old were you? You were a little older than me, like 3 years.
So my mom was. She's like the biggest. She still keeps in her garage. So it's like she keeps family photos, so like when we were kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she also keeps old O.J. Simpson magazines mm-hmm. from People Magazine and. Definitely she has Bill Clinton magazines. So I was alive and around, you know, I was probably, I don't know, 8, 10? I can't remember the year that it happened. But I was around, and I remember vividly, like, my mom watching And I remember the whole culture. I wasn't following it, but yeah.
It was a wonderful period of time.
It really was.
L.A. had race riots. O.J. was up. I mean, it was just unbelievably entertaining. And you know, the president got his dick sucked by an intern. It was
a much richer time.
A much richer. It was just simple times. You know, I remember, like, growing up and just hearing, like, you know, Democrats or my parents or whatever just being like, he just got a blowjob. What's the problem here? Then you go on to find out, you know, he rode the Lolita Express like 25 times, and he's probably getting blowjobs from much younger people. But, yeah, the casting just threw me off. I mean, she's going to be featured in the fucking show.
Who plays Hillary?
Carmella. Edie Falco plays Hillary.
Holy shit, I knew that. I forgot. Is she good or what?
She's only in the first episode for like 5 seconds. She walks into a bathroom, and Linda Tripp's like, obviously, like, oh my god, that's the first lady.
Did they put
And she's
like,
just real, just, you know, Hillary. She's just real.
Put a fat suit on her.
Business. No, she looks the same. This is 90s Hillary. She wasn't this. She didn't look like the fucking, she didn't look like
true,
she
yeah,
does
yeah.
now. You know? But yeah, I just, what a botch job. To have, it makes no sense. Like, why is Monica Lewinsky not how she was at all? She didn't. Beanie Feldstein is. I'm sorry, but she's like a fat girl.
And
Monica Lewinsky was like, I guess, kind of like out of shape, but she wasn't like. You don't look at her and go, "Oh, you're fat." Like, Beanie Feldstein's got the little jelly bean body.
You know, Lewinsky had like she was like a. Rubenesque, or, you know, what is that? What do you call, like, a plus size model or something, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, and that's a.
But that's being, you're being, that's, we're getting out of hand here. She's not even Rubenesque.
Well, so plus size models, I'm saying, like, they call them plus size models, and then you see what qualifies as that, and they just kind of got, like, wider hips.
You know what they did here? The showrunners decided to replace ugliness with fatness. So they were like, Lewinsky was kind of. Fat.
Yeah.
Or no, Lewinsky was kind of ugly.
Yeah.
Beanie is fat, not as ugly as Lewinsky. Has a better face, like if she lost weight.
Yeah.
We'll just swap them. People won't remember.
It's the same.
That doesn't make any sense to me. It's like you could get anybody. I mean, Monica Lewinsky kind of looked like a young Marcia Gay Harden. You know Marcia Gay Harden?
No.
You know Tim Robbins' wife in Mystic River?
Yes.
When he comes home and he's covered
hot.
In blood.
She's an older woman.
Older
but you
woman
could tell
now.
She, yeah.
And Lewinsky kind of looked like her a little bit. Like, I don't know. She's just, there's some pictures of Lewinsky. You look her up and you go, I get it. You're the ugly girl that I would fuck, though.
If I matched with her on Tinder, she'd be my hottest match.
Same. I'm still on Tinder. No, but yeah, it was very confusing. Just every couple minutes, you're like, why is Jonah Hill in a wig? Like, what is this? But yeah, I mean, it was an interesting time, the impeachment, because it's so funny. It's so tame compared to now.
No, like, yeah, that Biden that could, like, scandal. Shit on a horse chest and people would just be like, you know, one day of news, you know.
They would just blame his age. They'd be like, he's old. He doesn't have control of himself. I don't know why she was naked and he had his diaper off, but he shit all over this intern.
So CNN would be like, you know, we're shaming sex workers now. There's nothing, the two consensual adults having an act together. Who cares if it's a Cleveland steamer? Ooh, none of your business.
Yeah. I mean, I was I had a family dinner 5 or 6 days ago, and my family, we get a little wild. Everyone gets into conspiracies. You know, you've met them. And related, I guess, to Pizzagate in some ways is I was at family dinner, and we were talking about, apparently my uncle told me that
Stan?
No, not Stan. My other uncle, my more sane one, but he still does kind of believe in stuff like this, which I love. He goes, we were talking about Bourdain, and then it got into Chester Bennington.
Yes.
And Chris Cornell, who both hung themselves.
Right.
And apparently at that time, they were doing a whole, like, save the children thing.
They were on a campaign to save kids?
Yeah, like they were probably molested as kids, maybe, or something.
Yeah, I buy that.
Which maybe was, if they killed themselves, maybe that is the torture or whatever. But, like, there's these conspiracies that Chester Bennington, the lead singer of Linkin Park, is John Podesta's pedophile love child.
Holy shit.
And I got to say, I did at least a 5 to 10 second Google search. I'm in.
So you've done the research.
I vetted the whole process. Chester Bennington is John Podesta's pedophile love baby. They look exactly the same. And they were killed by the government because they were trying to release the kids.
And now I don't want to start pulling on threads and then the whole thing unravels. But do we know?
There's no need to do that.
There's no threads. So I guess I'm going to ask just the most simple follow up. Do we know who Chester Bennington's mom is?
No, we don't. We don't.
Okay.
You know who knows some about this is Ben.
Ben Avery.
Ben Avery. Why don't you try and call Ben right now? Let's see if he just picks up. It's a long shot, but Ben, I was talking to Ben about this like a week ago, and we didn't get to finish it.
Ben will know.
But Ben knew immediately. Ben has Chester Bennington's social security number on. Ben has all info on anything.
Ben's on the dark web.
Completely obsessed.
Investigating.
This is a big night for Ben. It's the tomorrow is 9/11. I'm sure at midnight Ben is like gonna like set fireworks off or something. Ben is obsessed with 9/11. The minute I met him, it was like all he did was make 9/11 jokes.
No, it's his favorite day of the year.
It's
can you hear? Is this working?
I can hear. Yeah.
Hey.
Hey, big guy.
Ben Avery.
Benjamin.
Hey.
Can you hear us both?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love this voice you're doing right now. He's ready.
Ben sounds like he's in a jacuzzi right now.
He sounds like he's getting sucked off by Lewinsky.
Is that Devin Costa?
That's... yep. What are you doing right now?
Am I talking to the whole gang?
It's just me and Joey today.
Richie.
Oh, wow.
Richie, I
don't know what Richie's up to.
Richie passed away.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but he died.
We were out in a boat, and he slipped off the back.
He slipped, and a seal ate him.
And it was an accident, and we were cleared.
It was, you know.
Police cleared us.
It was a Robert Wagner, Natalie Wood thing, but what are you going to do? But, Ben, we were just talking about, remember when I saw you like 4 or 5 days ago, and I brought up the Chester Bennington, John Podesta relationship? Have you heard this?
He goes, have I heard it?
There's a ton of Pizzagate stuff surrounding Bennington and, of course, Podesta. But are you talking about Chester Bennington making the documentary that was supposedly like exposing like human trafficking rings and then he died?
Oh, I didn't even know he was doing that. That's
I don't even know if that's true. That might just be...
It might be bullshit, but I was at a family dinner, and this is what we get into. And my aunt,
by the way,
and uncle,
guys, don't start fact checking yourself.
No, there's no need that we don't get into facts when it comes to this stuff. But I was at a family dinner, and my aunt and uncle brought this up. They go, "Well, you know, we were talking about Bourdain, and I was telling them that my friend thinks he's like kind of a pedophile, and then I do too, just because I support my friend, which is you." And then they go, well, have you heard this thing where like Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington both hung themselves like kind of the same way? And they were both doing a Save the Children campaign at that time, like a human sex trafficking thing. And then they were just both, hung themselves. And then
when you say they hung themselves in the same way, you mean like what, using a noose?
I don't know. It's the same. They hung themselves.
So everyone who's hung themselves in the same
way. Everyone that's hung themselves was going to release the kids, is what I'm saying.
I mean, I'm trying not to...
Here's the big thing, though, Joey. I showed you earlier. Chester Bennington looks just like John Podesta. He just looks like John Podesta with tattoos, and he's younger.
I did see that, and that actually... I think there is something to that.
Ben, what do you think about that? Have you seen how similar they look?
Sorry, Gracie's barking.
Oh, that's fine. She hates pedophilia. I get it.
Yeah, she hates it. So how do I feel about all this? I mean, well, considering I have almost no information and definitely no facts here.
Never stopped you before.
Did these guys kill themselves because of like human traffickers were like killed them? I don't know. Maybe.
Right.
Do you want me to say probably?
Make a stance. Say yes.
I'd appreciate it probably.
I'm going to go, you know what? I'm gonna go and say that yeah, absolutely.
It's absolutely. That's oh my God, what a win.
Well, you
on
know,
the eve
I
of 9/11.
I was on the fence about it because I'd only thought about it for like 15 seconds. I just needed another 5.
I mean, it's all ridiculous, but boy, when I looked at the similarities between Podesta and Chester. Also, Podesta's the type of idiot that would just, like, he doesn't know what to name his kids, but just names him Chester. He just probably saw, like, a Cheeto commercial. He's like, that's the kid, Chester.
I met the guy from Linkin Park that rap.
Oh, Mike, not Birbiglia.
Yeah, Mike Birbiglia.
Mike Birbiglia was in Linkin Park. I know who you're talking about. Didn't he segue off and do that other group where they were, like, Fort Minor, right? Where it was like, remember the name. Like,
why do you guys know? How do you, yes. Devin? Why do you know any of this? You were you a fucking fan?
I used to rock out to Fort Minor. They're my favorite hip hop group.
Wait, what was this guy's name again?
Mike, fucking Joey, give me your
Mike
phone.
Mike Shinoda.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
what?
Shinoda.
Shinoda.
What's great about Mike Shinoda is that after 9/11 happened, he went out like at like Lollapalooza or something, and he goes, "Hey y'all." Y'all saw the planes hit the towers, right? And everyone's like, yeah. And he goes, that was fucked up. He was just like, he's like, man, fuck the Taliban. 1, 2, 3. And they just like went into it and everybody cheered. And
that
they were
was
just like, I have come to. I don't even know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like a park song. Yeah, I've come so hard.
I've come so hard.
9/11 was fucked up.
What a slam dunk of a guaranteed cheer.
9/11 was fucked up.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was the
man.
Equivalent of, like, give it up for the troops.
Yeah, right, right.
But even fresh? It just right after, you're saying?
It was, like, the day after, I think. It's funny they still performed.
You're not going to, you can't shut that down, man.
No, no.
A movement like
no.
that?
No, because then the terrorists win.
Exactly. If Fort yeah. Minor doesn't play at Lollapalooza that night, we lose.
That's the best excuse
hope,
for go
I
on.
Post Q and post all this stuff. I hope things keep getting like even crazier and crazier.
Same. They will.
Alex tried to push us in that direction by talking about like interdimensional like pedophiles and aliens and stuff. And I think he was just probably ahead of his time because in 5 years we'll probably all be there. Because everyone kind of pulled back on that, but I think that's where we're going to be. Eventually, everybody I'm talking to now keeps talking about like past lives. My Uber driver was talking about like he's paying for the karma of his past life by having a shitty life now. And someone else was telling me that they believe in like chaos theory and all these things. But yeah.
Yeah.
What's chaos theory? What is that?
I don't know.
Well, I learned about chaos theory from Life is Strange. Have you played the video game?
No.
It's a theory. You play as this little girl and you can go back in time. And like change the future. So like my friend got shot, and then I go back in time and I like change one thing and prevent her from getting shot.
Butterfly
but I keep
effect.
Using my power so much that eventually like the fabric of space and time starts to break down, and like whales are washing up on the beach, and like a giant hurricane is coming, and the sky is turning red, and there's like two moons, and it's because since I'm changing how life is actually supposed to be. Like I'm an aberration. Then everything is just unraveling completely and breaking down because we're in a timeline that isn't supposed to exist.
Right. Yeah,
first
which
of
I
all,
agree with.
I mean, listen, Butterfly Effect starring Ashton Kutcher in 2008.
I mean, listen, they've been giving us clues forever.
They proved it. That movie proved it conclusively, I think.
And there was that movie with Jim Carrey where it was like 23 and he's like 2 + 3 + 7 equals 11, yeah. 9/11. And that's, yeah.
He detects patterns. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No,
they've been doing this. They've been feeding us little bits and pieces for years. I agree with that, though. I do think we're in a type of bubble universe, which I've heard much smarter people than me say. I think Michio Kaku believes that fucking
Japanese man. Japanese scientist.
That boar.
He could use a little energy. Maybe he could get on, he could start drinking Red Bulls or something.
But it is true. Like, I was talking to Joey right before we called you about, like, I was watching the there's that new show about the impeachment, like Bill Clinton's impeachment on FX. You know how they do like the Gianni Versace assassination and like the people.
Yeah.
So I was watching that, which is, it's good, but it's also ridiculous because they have like Jonah Hill's sister playing Monica Lewinsky, and every scene you're just like, I don't understand why is
Monica Lewinsky a 400-pound 18-year-old?
Yes, it just it doesn't make any sense, and they keep talking about her like she's a knockout. And she's just, you know, like, you could see her. You could see, like snacks from the fucking food section on set, like, in her pocket.
She's a knockout. She's a knockout, but she's someone like Billy Bob Thornton would, like, fuck in the ass in Bad Santa 2.
Yes, exactly. She's a knockout.
You're saying she's got, like, craft services spilling out of the blue dress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, she's a knockout. Ralphie from The Sopranos would fuck her.
The stain on the dress. The stain on the dress is mac and cheese from craft services.
That's going to be the final episode. She's in court, and the cum stain, it's mac and cheese.
They go, you're right. Yeah, it's a big... It's the big defense attorney goes, Your Honor, we've got the results. It's mac and cheese. He takes one look at her and he goes, I don't even need to see it.
And Bill,
that's, I'm sure that's
and
mac
they cut
and cheese.
They cut to Bill Clinton and he goes, I told you she was a big girl. Because she liked to eat.
She go, had no cum on that dress. She swallowed every drop.
She thought my Johnson was a lollipop. Didn't have to tell her a thing. But yeah, no, it's just, it's like absurd. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Somebody obviously owed Jonah Hill a favor or something. So they're like, yeah, we'll get your sister Beanie in it. I mean, it's like the girl from Hairspray. Remember Hairspray? It was like a giant fat girl.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. But we're talking about.
I thought that was John Travolta.
Was John Trav? Was that John?
Hairspray. What is Hairspray?
Hairspray was that musical, and there was the fat lead.
I said yeah, because I was trying to move right on.
Right.
I don't know what that
I
is.
Think John Travolta played a great big like Gilbert Grape fat woman in that show. I could be mistaken.
Maybe they made a show.
No way.
Too. I don't know.
Travolta played a big fat one.
Well, he probably he's been waiting his whole life to put on women's clothes. I mean, it's Travolta, but yeah. So anyway, we were just talking about that show, and it was like it's just funny how. At that time in the 90s, like, that was a crazy deal. Like, oh, the president got blown, and it's a big scandal, and we're going to impeach him. And you fast forward to this day and age, and it's like, oh, the president, he got impeached because he keeps, he's Mexicans are rapists, and he tried to get a bunch of people to go kill everybody at the Capitol. And, like, just everything is so much higher scale now, but as ridiculous and not as serious, but it's just, nothing feels real. You know, like nothing really feels real.
Yeah, if you like watch movies that are set in the 90s or like the 80s, like the guy's big issue is always like that, like his neighbor keeps like mowing his side of the lawn.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Like, side like, with the oak tree, like where the fence line is.
Right.
Like that's always like the big conundrum.
Exactly.
And now it's like, you know, my daughter keeps stealing from me. and she got like her laptop got like blue screened by the FBI, and apparently she's like a dark web pedophile, and she like lives in Australia now.
Exactly.
It's crazy how different things are.
We went from Liar Liar with like Jim Carrey to like First Reformed, where it's like, okay, a priest, a guy kills himself because he doesn't want his kid to live in this horrific post-apocalyptic world, and then the priest fucking, what is he like, strap a bomb to himself and walk into a church or something, and then he like starts making out with a woman and she's dressed like Jesus. Or, I mean, it's crazy. But
now movies are like there's three school shooters in a class, and like they just go through like Rambo style, and like some girl's just trying to stop it. Because those are the problems now.
Yeah, that is. It's true. That's the thing. I mean, even our modern taxi driver, we had to put like a little wacky like DC universe spin on it. Like, no, it's the Joker. He's not just killing innocent people in the streets because of a major mental health crisis and because everyone in this country feels completely alone. And
he's a shooter.
He's a fucking, it's a movie about a shooter, but we just like, no, give him a weird laugh and we'll just make him a comic book character. Like, you know, what is, like, I'm sure, you know, Spider-Man in 2 years.
I fucking hated Joker, by the way, man.
I know you did, but.
You know what I want to see is like a movie that romanticizes Dylan Roof, but it's like a biopic.
Oh, they'll do that. It'll be.
No, I shouldn't have said Dylan Roof.
What? You want to see a movie that romanticizes Dylan? I didn't even catch that.
No, I want. I'm going to take that back. I'll say the Dark Knight Shooter.
Okay,
because he actually. I mean, Dylan Roof was a racist.
He was a racist psychopath. It'd be interesting if they did a Remember the Titans and, like, Denzel Washington, like, gets through to Dylan Roof on his team, and then he stops.
He stops. It's like a revisionist
it's
history.
It's revisionist history. Yeah, Tarantino writes it. The N-word's still thrown all throughout it.
I want to see a James Holmes. I believe that was the Dark Knight Shooter.
Yes, he was the Dark Knight Shooter.
And I want to see you're following him mm-hmm. in his life, mm-hmm. and, like, he's got a bully.
Yeah.
And you're going... Leave him alone. You know what I mean? And then he makes a friend who takes him to a gun range.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is fun. This is like the first thing I've actually enjoyed.
And it's Chris Kyle.
But then he kind of like starts hearing voices. And he goes, he believes them. And it's shown in a way where the voices actually seem real. And maybe they are real. We'll do that in the movie as well.
That'll be good.
And then so this is where we tie back in the interdimensional pedophiles. He's tapping into their wavelength, and he can hear them communicating with each other. And they're all the people that he killed were pedophiles.
That's going to be great.
You like that?
I love that movie. It sounds like a more fun, like, blockbuster version of that Joaquin Phoenix movie where he's killing pedophiles. Ben, what was the name of that movie? Remember that? Came out.
You were hardly there. You were never really there.
Never really there.
Yeah, that was what it was. Yeah. You were never really there.
Yeah, and yeah, right. Wasn't that it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. He's just killing pedophiles with hammers.
That was the start too. I remember when I went and saw that movie alone for whatever sick reason. I just me and my hammer in the theater, and I remember seeing that and being like, "This is kind of," because I think the Pizzagate stuff was kind of out there a little bit. But I just remember thinking it was, like, very interesting parallels to, like, it was kind of the first movie where they were kind of getting into, like, yeah, no, there's, like, government pedophilia, and this guy is just, like, brutally murdering extremely powerful people that have, you know, hurt children.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting movie.
Ben, what is your take on that?
Part of that movie is when Joaquin walks into that mansion and kills Anthony Bourdain with a frying pan.
I just did a spit take. I literally just spit a booze out on Devin's day.
All right. I unfortunately have to go. My wife has FaceTimed me like 3 times, and I have to get dinner.
Okay, no problem. See you, Ben.
All right, see you guys.
Bye, Ben.
Bye. Well, that was good. We got a little out of him, I guess.
He was low energy.
He's low energy tonight, but listen to the Patreon. No, kidding. He didn't have that much time today, but it's always good to... I didn't get into 9/11 with him. I wanted to talk about 9/11. It's the anniversary. It's tonight's the night.
I mean, he vanished out of nowhere, so it's not your fault.
He's left me in the dark. He's gone in the dark, that Ben Avery.
I mean, frankly, I'm sick of him.
Honestly, it's, you know... We gotta move on from these conspiracies. I mean, they're all nonsense.
These fucking internet brony, you know, all these freak shows out there wearing Foxtel butt plugs, they love Ben, so we have him on. But the fact is, we don't want him on.
No, no. No, we love Ben.
Not me. I'll say I'm against him.
You should fight Ben next time he's on.
I fight him every time I see
him. You do fight him every. You do put him in headlocks, and you could. There's a great picture on our Patreon of a night that Joey literally picked him up and put him over his shoulder.
I just love you're a real natural salesman. You go, by the way, Patreon.
By the way, Patreon guys, a special picture of.
What the hell have you been up to? Do you see? We've lost Richie. It's affecting the dynamic of the show.
I don't think it is. Do you?
I mean, I like having Richie. This,
I love Richie. I don't think it's effective. Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it is. We need that guy.
But what have you been up to? What's going on in your life?
Well, I did that. I finished that show, right?
The show we talked about in the last
episode, and I got my check today.
What are we talking? Give the amount.
It's just depressing.
Give the amount.
Uncle Sam is a real piece of shit.
Go ahead. Give the first amount and then after
so
taxes.
So it had overtime in it and like double pay. So I was expecting decent amount, and it's with the overtime and the double. It was $2,900 without overtime and double, right?
Okay.
Then with that, it was $4,400. Then that got taxed $1,800. So it was I got $2,600, which is less than the normal amount if it didn't get overtime. It makes no sense.
I mean, that's insane.
It's insanity.
It really makes you want to... Here's the problem, though.
I wanted to turn my Uber Eats app on and just be like, enough. I would have made more. A career.
You probably would have made more Ubering.
Yeah, because I don't even have to really pay. You make under 10 grand. I don't know, man. It's just ridiculous. Like, $1,800 tax. I made literally less than I would have if we didn't get overtime, which I was like, oh, cool. We're making more money.
I mean,
insane.
That pisses me off. It's insane. Honestly, I was going to say, let's leave the state, but you can't get those jobs out of the state.
No, you can't. I mean, you can go to like Dallas and you could go be in like Yellowstone or whatever show Kevin Costner's doing where it's about him fucking yelling at Native Americans or whatever.
Yeah, you could hope to luck into the 18 people on the cast in Yellowstone.
You put on some fucking face paint, you just get called a redskin by Kevin Costner, whatever he's doing on that show.
I don't know if I've told you this. Kevin Costner,
Big South Dakota guy, isn't he?
He's a big South Dakota guy. He filmed Dances with Wolves out there.
Yeah, which I've never been able to finish.
Neither have I. I haven't seen it.
I know it's a classic to people. Every time I turn it on, I go, I can't do this.
I think it won an Oscar. I'm not really
sure. I know. I think it won like the same year as Goodfellas. I think it won over Goodfellas, I think.
I think you're right. You are right. Because there was that whole thing about Scorsese. How does he not have the first Oscar was The Departed.
Mm-hmm.
But so, he came to South Dakota for that movie, fell in love with it, and then what he did was he bought a casino in Deadwood, South Dakota. It was this, Deadwood is, many people know it from the TV show on HBO. It was a Wild West town. Yeah. People moved there because it was they were sick of the law, and so a bunch of like outlaws went to Deadwood, South Dakota, and started their own society with no laws.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole thing was like, okay, we'll govern this ourselves. We don't need the law to tell us what to do. So it became a town that was known for having like a million whores and, gambling, and you
right.
could shoot somebody. And as long as everybody was like, yeah, that was a good shooting, that guy had it coming, you're fine. There's no trial, nothing, And then if the town says that seemed bad, they'll hang you or they'll shoot you back. But so that's how the town started. And now they are still allowed to have casinos for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like somehow the Deadwood laws from that time carried over. And usually you need to have like a specific gambling license or you need to be on a Native American reservation or something.
Right, but isn't South Dakota very Native American? So
yeah,
maybe
but this
that's
part
why.
Is not.
No, interesting.
So it's this weird exemption for, Deadwood laws from that time carried over. So Costner comes to South Dakota to film Dances with Wolves and he finds a casino. It's like a shitty casino, a little shithole. It's built. It was probably built in the time of the original show when that was set. He buys it, and then he turns the entire second story into a monument to himself. So the downstairs of it, it's like a bunch of blackjack tables and mm-hmm. stuff like that. You go upstairs, and it's this insane Kevin Costner museum. It's like it's a booth where it has like in a glass case. It's his.
The man's obsessed with himself.
It's a jersey from his baseball movie.
From Field of Dreams.
Exactly. So yeah. There's a thing to that, and then there's a TV that has a 24-hour loop where he's just playing the guitar, and it loops forever. It's just I didn't know he played music.
No, he's one of these guys. He thinks he's God's gift to Earth. Costner.
And I agree with that on some level.
I liked Open Range. I don't know if you know this. I watched they redid a Field of Dreams game in the MLB this year. The White Sox played the Yankees, I think, and they did it in a cornfield. Like they built
this year.
Like I watched this like a month and a half ago with my friend Brian, and they did this whole thing where they built this baseball field in a cornfield. and all the players walk out from the cornfield.
Yeah.
And it's on Fox, and they play the music from Field of Dreams as these players walk out. And Kevin Costner then comes out, and he's really into it. You could tell he really takes every job seriously. So he's acting. He's looking around wow. And he's throwing a ball in his mitt, and he's just looking around at everybody, and he's pointing at people. He's really, really into the Field of Dreams
character. Costner, anything that is, I mean, the guy's build, first of all, I bet he paid $3 million to make all this happen because he's a sick freak. But, anything that is a semi-tribute to Costner, he's in.
He's totally in because, it was all about, he kept, he was he might as well have come up there and been I'm very happy to have inspired the MLB to become the MLB that it is today.
Yeah.
I know I invented baseball. I'm the reason you're all here. I know Babe Ruth used to look up to me. I'm Kevin Costner.
Exactly.
I did Bull Durham. He's one of those guys where it's you could tell he thinks he's at, when he's doing a movie, he probably thinks he is that guy, all the time. If you call him while he's on a movie, he'll probably pick up hello, doing a voice. He's I'm playing. He's playing,
I'm
General
in Waterworld,
Lee
yeah.
or whatever. Yeah, Waterworld. I'm sure he's insufferable when he's making a movie.
In Waterworld, I promise he was going around just pretending there's no land anywhere. He's collecting dirt.
He's got that Americana thing, where he kind of, if he did a World War II movie, he probably for 2 years, a couple years after he does the movie, talks to people like he served.
Oh, definitely.
He brings up Normandy.
Absolutely.
He's I would have lost a lot of good men then.
I don't know where he was born or from, but he's now he thinks of himself as a cowboy.
He does. He thinks he's a legitimate cowboy. It's like, Kev, it's 2021.
Yeah.
You were never a cowboy.
Also, you were born in Pasadena, probably.
I think he was, actually.
I think
Pasadena sounds about right.
I think
he
I
might
bet
not
he,
be.
I don't know. I'll look it up.
But that sounds good to me. Let's run with it. Just like Chester Bennington is John Podesta's pedophile love child.
I mean, it's insane. The whole thing's insane.
But Costner is he really.
You're saying Costner.
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 Costner. You could tell he loves the smell of his own farts.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, he probably has women killed that scoff at his farts.
Born in Linwood, California.
Oh, yeah. That real cowboy place, Linwood.
And I was just talking to a chick. That's
Old West. When I think of the Old West, I think of Linwood, California.
Yeah, no, exactly. You're a real cowboy, Costner. But yeah, somebody was just telling me, somehow that Yellowstone came up or something. And I go, oh, I'm actually from kind of that area, and she goes, oh wow, I went to high school with the Costner kids. See, they're Hollywood people.
They're Hollywood kids. Yeah, they're all Hollywood people. They're
not cowboys.
That's what everyone is nowadays. Every time I'm wondering who's on the screen in front of me in some major show, I go, who is that? I see them a lot lately. Who is that? I see them a lot lately. I look them up on Wikipedia. You find out that their mom is Meryl Streep and that their dad is the MGM lion. Every time. You go, I wonder if they have any roots in this business. And then you find out, oh, my dad is the Paramount Mountain.
It really makes you question talent.
It does all the time. I go, this isn't even, so all you got to do is be the fucking, you just have to be cum. You just have to be the cum of a famous person and you're in. What's the talent here?
And I don't know.
It's crazy, actually. The amount of people, any of your favorite things, if you go, who is, I'll look them up, they're always, oh, he used to hang out with David Mamet's daughter, and then he ran with Dustin Hoffman's family, and then his mom is
some of them
started
are good at acting.
Universal, and
some of them are good at acting.
They
though.
They all are. Yeah, I know, but it's
that's the interesting part.
That is
interesting.
It's because you're raised in.
Well, the question becomes: can anyone be talented at acting? Is it not that hard? It's like all you have to do is just have. A acting coach when you're young, and then you can just, anyone can do it?
It makes me think.
That's what I think.
That's what I think, too.
Seems like anyone can do it, kind of.
I mean, we'll find out Daniel Day-Lewis's father was a Panavision camera. Oh, wow, that's nice. Look, you're a double agent.
Yeah.
You know the production. I don't know, man. It's weird. It's like kind of starting to become depressing. Like, you so rarely find out about like stories where they just made it on their own. Like, James Gandolfini is an interesting one because Gandolfini apparently just like accompanied his friend to an audition.
That's a pure story.
It's a classic, like, and then somebody was like, what about you? And then...
Well, those are the ones that give you some hope. Exactly.
And that's why you and I start signing up for acting classes and just sitting in the back. And then after 6 months, we go, this fucking person hasn't said one thing to me. I'm brilliant.
I've been brooding in the lobby for 6 months.
Dude, I used to fucking have crazy fantasies. Growing up in this city makes you crazy. I used to think, like, how do you get noticed? Like, maybe if I go down to, like, Rodeo Drive and I drop my script in front of any Range Rover, or, like, if I drop my script in front of, like, people eating it, like...
If I look like I'm in a hurry and it's in my back pocket and I dress really cool...
And then I go, oh, my God, did my script just fall in front of you? I'm at Earth Cafe. The people are eating out front. I go, I'm sorry. Is that my script?
You're waiting 10 minutes for them to pick it up.
I wait. They don't. I go, did I drop this? I look at them. I go, did I drop this? And then I open it. I go, that's a pretty funny scene.
I go, whoever wrote this is good.
Yeah, I don't know who wrote it. I just dropped it.
Was it in my pocket? I don't know.
Who knows? I'm just staring at some family at Ocean Prime. Like, what? I mean, come on. This is good. This is good stuff. I have no idea how anyone really does it. I mean, it's crazy because, like I just said, it's just, I'm getting sick of it. I'm getting sick of looking up people where I go, well, who's this girl? Who's that guy? And it's always like they are just, they've been running through Hollywood their whole lives with their family.
I think we talked about this privately, but there's a massive shortage of like unique talent in acting.
Truly.
These days, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're talking about young actors. There was a generation of people where it was like, you know, River Phoenix, Joaquin Phoenix, Ethan Hawke, and Johnny Depp, and you know, all these other actors from that generation that I'm not thinking of, but there's like, you know, Val Kilmer and
right,
all tons of these, this young, unique generation of you know, who knows what.
You could sense a lack of depth out of people now. That's right. The problem. Yeah. You know, like Leo is kind of the only, like,
Leo's 40 fucking 5.
No, but he gets a pass because Leo also grew up poor with like weird hippie parents. In Echo Park.
I'm talking about young,
Cheers.
New talent.
I know.
Leo, I love Leo.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, he was on the Disney, the Mickey Mouse Club and all that shit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Whatever. He had some
child
stuff
star.
As a child.
Yeah.
But I mean, like...
He's like Shia LaBeouf, but yeah.
Yeah, but like now...
Shia is the best example. He's the youngest guy.
Yeah.
He's still 35
Shia,
or 37.
Another Echo Park. Cheers.
Echo
Cheers
Park.
To you.
Wow.
We're in Echo Park right now, my hometown. Yeah, no, it's like, you go from like, hey, Robert Mitchum, James Cagney, like people that were like drafted into world wars. That's why their acting is so great, because you sense this depth with them. And now you're just getting somebody that's, their whole life, they've probably had like a driver. And now I'm an actress, or now I'm, you know, like.
And listen, I don't need you to have a grizzled background. You can be Christian Bale. I think he was like a cushy. I think Christian Bale came from like a rich family.
Sometimes,
guess what? He can fucking whatever he does. You know, whatever it was.
Yeah, I'm not saying that.
He's figured out how to be a good actor and shit.
Nicolas Cage is a Coppola.
Yeah,
Nicolas Cage is a member of the Coppola family. I don't know who Francis Ford Coppola is to him.
He's his uncle.
He's his uncle. He's related to the Coppolas. He changed his name. And he decided to do 8,000 movies a year until he proved himself. And he has. He's amazing.
Yeah.
No, but, like, Nicolas Cage is, like, an insane man.
He changed his name because he didn't want to have that...
That feeling, yeah.
That advantage that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And he fucking proved it. I mean, Nicolas Cage is ridiculous in a lot of movies, but he's also fucking great.
He's an Oscar.
Of course.
He's
fun to watch.
He's been
like watching him.
Shit movies, but he's got an Oscar. He's done movies where it's as good as acting gets. And then, yeah, he's done some duds, but he's got the chops to be very interesting and amazing. He's done it a million times.
The Hate Watch podcast is huge fans of Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. No,
we If anyone out there hasn't seen Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, it's one of the... I watched it at Joey's place like a couple weeks ago. I've already seen it a million times, but we watched it again. It had commercials too. We were dying of laughter. It was killing us.
It was like I haven't laughed that hard at a comedy special in. I actually never.
Never. Probably
never.
No.
I don't laugh that hard at comedy specials. And the last time I laughed kind of hard was maybe 10 years ago. This movie was making me belly laugh. And yeah, we've seen it a million times. I hadn't seen it in a few years, though. And it was just Nicolas Cage. You could picture him with Werner Herzog setting up these scenes and then making these insane decisions.
There's these hilarious shots of like iguanas and alligators and then Nicolas Cage is looking at them like, you don't see that? He goes, there's a fucking alligator right there.
That is probably my hardest laugh in the movie. They're in an interrogation room, and they're like, you know, watching a guy getting interrogated through the glass, and Cage goes, he's like watching, and he goes, hey, well, by the way, what's with the fucking iguana?
And they go, what iguana?
They go, yeah, there's no iguana. And then there's an iguana in the fourth shot, and Cage... He literally
swats it.
He smacks an iguana in real life. That's
and
not
they
CGI.
Bite. They bite.
They bite. No, he goes, yeah, the iguana. What are you talking about? The iguana. I literally haven't laughed that hard.
Val Kilmer's also in this movie. One of his last movies with a voice, which also check out the Val Kilmer documentary. It's fucking great and brutal, but like Kilmer's also in Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, which has always been one of my favorite movies ever since I saw it like in high school.
Kilmer is
so weird.
Is amazing
and
in it too, by the way. In the opening scene where
he's a psychopath.
In the flooded jail where the guy's going like, "Hey guys, you gotta let me out of here."
He's this guy is drowning in this jail in a hurricane or something. There's
Katrina.
He's drowning and he's like asking for help and they're like, "We're not gonna come down there. What do you expect me to get my pants wet?" You know, Nicolas Cage is doing Nicolas Cage. And then Val Kilmer goes, "Come on, we'll get the time of death tomorrow from the autopsy." And they walk away and then Nicolas Cage has like a conscience and saves him.
Oh,
but
that
movie kicks fucking ass. There's a scene where Nicolas Cage takes the oxygen tank wires out of an old woman's nose and holds it until she tells him the information he wants. Then he gives it back to her. Then he holds a gun to both of their heads and he goes, "You're the fucking problem with this country." It's so fucking funny. You don't see anything like that ever made. You need a crazy German man, Werner Herzog, that ate a shoe one time.
Oh, sweet Bavarian genius.
To come to New Orleans, and he's Bavarian?
Yeah.
To come to New Orleans and just direct this weird fucking movie. It's way better than the first Bad Lieutenant, too, which I know is a classic by Abel Ferrara and shit, but like...
Listen, the first one is amazing.
But this one
Harvey
is
Keitel
just...
Harvey Keitel is good as hell. Unique. No, you know, Werner Herzog, and it's like, if you hear they're going to remake a classic, you immediately go, "Oh, this is... Fuck that. Like, this is bullshit." 100%. And then you watch it, and you go, "This has never happened before." It's better.
It is. It's a comedy,
yeah,
in my opinion. But it's also serious, and the soundtrack's great, and it turns into this thing where all of a sudden Nicolas Cage is just fucking doing tons of drugs and drinking, and he's got a dog with him now, and he's got a black kid with him,
and he's
driving around Eva Mendes, who's a hooker.
Unpayable debt he's racking up.
He's racking up unbelievable debt with these bets on college football. It is everything anyone wants out of a fucking crime comedy fucking movie. It's just the best. And you know Werner Herzog had the nerve to say he had never heard of Bad Lieutenant before?
That's fucking perfect.
Like that he just made
that.
He just made this without any knowledge of the first Bad Lieutenant.
No, I bet he was saying like, "Oh, no, when like I hadn't seen it, but I he probably asked somebody like, "I want to make a movie about a bad detective or something." And they go, "Oh yeah, well, we, you know, they're kind of like Bad Lieutenant." And he's probably like, "Good, yes, let's do that. Let's just give me that. We don't even need to write."
They go, "Just like the movie Bad Lieutenant with Harvey Keitel." And he goes, "Let's name it that. Yes. We will name it Bad Lieutenant."
He goes, "Sir, the rights, it's going to be an issue." He goes,
"We
give
call
me.
It Port of New Orleans." That movie is amazing. I remember I saw that in theaters, and some people were walking out, and others stayed, and it was that... You can tell people love movies when they lean in, and they get on their knees, you know, like this. They start watching it like this.
They're like, oh, like, what are these guys doing?
They start watching it
this
like this.
This is weird. What are they making here?
That's the sign of any time I love a movie, I'll go from this to this. I go, all right.
There's something. These guys are cooking up magic.
I go, what's going on here? I go, this is the fucking... These iguanas and alligators. And
have you seen the... by the way, the iguanas are the real star of that movie.
Yes.
But have you seen the footage where Werner Herzog's being interviewed in, like, Los Angeles? And it's just... They wanted to have, like, a cool background. I think they're in front of, like... Runyon Canyon or something like that, and they're just like, okay, yeah, well, let's meet us here and we'll do the interview for whatever bullshit we're making. And they're in the middle of the interview, and then suddenly Werner Herzog gets shot in the stomach.
Is that real? I've heard of this. I thought it was like a fake.
No, it's real.
He gets shot?
Yeah, so they're doing an interview, and suddenly he's like, oh, ouch, what the hell?
And he, like, acts like nothing
happened.
No,
he's like, well, so it wasn't like it didn't penetrate his skin, but so he goes, oh, what the hell? And they're all like, let's get out of here. And then it cuts to them in, like, a van that they escaped to.
He caught a stray? Or it skimmed him?
So nobody really knows what it was, but so they're in the van and he pulls up his shirt and he's like, oh yes. And it's his whole gut is like purple and brown. Like it looks like insanely fucked up.
Like he got hit with like a rubber bullet or something.
Or a rubber bullet, or it was like a ricochet or whatever. Who knows what it was? But he's sitting there going like, oh, jeez, yes, that hurts. And the film crew's going like, oh my God, let's call 911. And he goes, no, it's not a significant wound. And he just puts his shirt down and he's just like ready to keep going.
God, that guy's amazing.
They don't make him like,
they don't make
like
people
that.
Like Werner Herzog. You see Rescue Dawn. We love Rescue Dawn.
I fucking love
also
Rescue
check
Dawn.
Out Rescue Dawn, folks. Probably one of the best prisoner of war escape movies I've ever seen. I mean, granted, you know, there's like The Great Escape or whatever, but that's dated. I'm trying to think of other great prison escape movies.
My favorite Rescue Dawn's incredible. Well, Steve Zahn, we went to the same veterinarian. We spoke about Sweet Meadow on the last podcast.
Yes.
The vet that I went to care for Meadow,
yeah.
Steve Zahn would show up.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was just going for himself. He thinks the vet is the doctor.
He was getting ivermectin.
He was... I love Steve Zahn. He's one of my favorite.
No, I guess he lives in like Koreatown or whatever it was. It was the Olympic.
He lives on a farm actually, but when he's in LA, he lives
must be in like downtown
he
or
lives
Koreatown.
Like, he lives like in the middle of nowhere when he's not
really
filming. Yeah, that's what I've heard. He's like a farm boy.
But yeah, so Rescue Dawn. Steve Zahn was I heard some behind the scenes thing where, like on that script, I think. Werner like typed it out himself. Like he wrote the script, and he must have written some shit in Werner's voice where it was like impossible to say as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, like it was Steve Zahn sang it to Christian Bale, and they kept doing it to each other, like how Werner wrote it or whoever wrote it. But they would just start laughing because it was so insane,
so ridiculous. Yeah.
And then Werner finally goes like, Sorry, guy, I don't understand. Like, why are you laughing? It's a serious scene. And Steve Zahn was basically just like, that's not how, like, an American would say this.
Right, right.
But then instead of Werner being, like, a big diva, he goes, okay, like, just say it how you would say it. And that was the movie. Like, he would just let them kind of say it they thought it was good.
It's great because that movie is great.
Yes.
That's like a great fucking movie.
It's
I mean, that movie made a really big impact on me when I was like, I think I saw it, you know, 12 or 13 or whatever. But like,
old, a couple years older probably. But you know, that there's that scene where he's like eating worms.
Yes, the bugs.
It's just
he and Christian Bale's character is just like, I'll eat them, fucking whatever. And the others are sick of it. And Steve's on. They're all starving. And
exactly. No, like you could like he ate bugs.
He ate bugs.
He had an A-list star eating bugs, and they were just like,
what is the
Werner
quote?
Herzog? Oh yeah, I'll eat bugs for Werner Herzog.
When Christian Bale finally gets, spoiler, he escapes and he gets back home, to the military, and he's on the plane or whatever, and they all congratulate him on getting rescued or whatever. He goes like, if you have an itch, scratch it. If you have, you know, like that he has this whole beautiful speech about like just live in the moment. Moment to moment keeps you alive. Like, you know, like
it's
if you are thirsty, drink. If you have an itch, scratch it. If you are hungry, eat. If you know, like
Fern will pepper in like a very inspirational message. Everyone sometimes he'll make something where it's like, oh, this is, you're like a nihilistic fucking psycho.
Yeah.
But then he'll make something where it's like, I'm not in the mood to be nihilistic. I'll make an inspirational film.
He's a legendary filmmaker.
What's
the documentary made about him and the making of that movie where he like eats a shoe? It's like crazy. I've heard about it. I've never seen it, but it's like he gets a whole, there's like a whole tribe.
You're thinking of the movie with the, so it's I can't remember the name, but so they go to, and it's Clyde Klinsky, Klaus Klinsky is this insane German actor that actually, like, he went to jail after this because, like, they busted him being, like, a major criminal. I can't remember what he was doing. Maybe, like, a fucking pedophile or something like that.
I was thinking that.
I think he was a pedophile.
Everyone is.
But so they had, but he was, like, the best German actor at that time. So they had him in, like, some jungle where they were filming. And Werner wanted it to be real, so like he's like, all right, you know, we're building a real boat, and he's making like his film crew pick up the boat and carry it up a big hill, like in the same way that you would have to do,
right,
if you were actually like traveling on this route, because that's what you would have to do. Like you would, if you're like a guy traveling from a place to a place at this time, you go take the river to here, and then oh, there's a hill or a mountain. And, okay, well, we have to pick up the boat and move it over the hill. That's the only way to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, like, I think, like, 3 people died because, like, carrying the boat was such a dangerous thing.
So he's, he makes movies.
No,
people die. I want to know when I'm watching something, somebody died.
I need blood.
I need blood.
I need to know somebody.
I need a blood receipt.
So listen, Werner could not have known that people were going to die, and then they died. They weren't being careful. I don't think they were being careful.
No, not at all. Werner's out of his mind. He got shot.
He goes,
not serious. He puts his shirt. He goes, this shirt covers the wound.
Yeah. Their necks are snapped. He's like, this is not a serious
thing. Not a serious thing.
He goes, cremate that body.
He goes, life is just like death.
No, what I was saying is that I don't blame Werner. He goes, can you guys carry that boat over the hill? And they're like, they probably said yes.
Mm-hmm.
Werner trusted them. He's a trusting, good guy. And then they're idiots, and they slipped, and a couple died.
Similar to that, remember when Tarantino was in
but real
trouble?
Let's go back to this. But Klaus Kinski also, in this doc, after a bunch of these guys died carrying a boat, he then, like, stole a gun and went up into the hills and started shooting pot shots at them. It's a very good doc.
Started shooting
at their own crew. And then Werner
What is this documentary? We got to go back to your place and watch it right now.
Let's get some burritos and
watch this fucking documentary.
I'm in on all that. But, yeah, I can't remember the name, but in, you know, look
oh
it up if
God.
You're listening.
Right.
But so, yeah, he does that, and then he ends up they're getting shot at by somebody at their tents. God. So they have their like film camp, and they're just getting shot at. And Werner Herzog runs out. He's like, where's the bullets coming from? He goes up, runs up, finds Klaus on a hill shooting at them.
Yeah,
and steals his gun and goes. I think he's pointing the gun at Klaus, and he goes, tell me right now, Klaus, I will kill you. He goes, tell me, will you stop? Will you stop? And they worked something out where Werner, I think, would have
killed
him.
I
think Werner's killed a lot of people.
Interesting.
Well, I think.
Or he has this sense. So he knows that
he's killed one person at least.
Sure. Maybe. But,
That's my theory. I think he's probably killed a lot. But all good kills, like people that he had to kill.
Remember Grizzly Man, and he listens to the audio of Timothy Treadwell dying by the bear?
That's one of my favorite
and
clips.
And he goes, you will never listen to this. we will never play this.
Yes.
You can never listen to this.
Yes.
But it was such a tease, because it's like, but you just listen to it in front of us.
No, we're like the Faces of Death live leak generation. We're like, give us the bare footage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that Grizzly Man's fucking great, too.
The guy's made a bunch of masterpieces.
He's a brilliant, brilliant filmmaker. Love that guy. But it was similar. It's similar to, like, when directors ask their actors to do too much or whatever. Like, remember when Uma Thurman had that big, like, op-ed in, like, the New York Times or whatever, where it was, like, making Tarantino look like this, like, psychopath that, like, forced her to drive the car and do her own stunt. And then when you do look at it, it's fucked up. I mean, she does get pretty hurt, and she's driving this, like, piece of shit car. But you can imagine, I mean, I've been on a set, but, like, it's like you're trying to get this thing done, and he goes, the car's safe. He goes, he said that he had just done the route. It's like you just drive up this street. Drive up
don't
this
trust
road.
The woman driver. Am
and,
I right?
And fortunately, you know, Tarantino got by biology.
No. It's, yeah, no. So, yeah, I don't know what that was. I don't know the rules on a movie for stunts. I mean, you got a fucking wound right now doing a stunt
on
a
movie. I got fucked up. I mean, the guy did a stunt for me. He, like, got thrown into a table, but then I had to get on the ground and then get thrown around on the
but
ground.
But some of you fucking got
I got fucked up, but I'm also a little baby boy.
I mean, that's
I'm a little weak baby boy.
I mean, listen, it cut the skin. I think that's a lawsuit. I listen.
It's been about a week and a half. I might be suing NBC Universal
soon. If the
show
doesn't take off.
You take $1,800 out of my fucking paycheck, okay? I'm suing. You don't think I documented the whole fucking thing?
I mean, it seems like I've seen you having like elbow pain.
I'm going to show up like Janice Soprano fucking with a neck brace on in court. No, but yeah, it's one of those things where it's like you're trying to make a fucking movie.
Yeah.
Who knows what day it is? Who knows how many hours everyone's been up?
Yeah.
You go, no, it's just not going to look right if it's the stunt person.
Right.
Just do it. I did it. I just drove the car. It's fine.
Yeah.
And then in the take, the car just happened to fuck up. And, you know, she got brutally
injured. The details on it. But yeah, no, it's, you know, she assumed the risk.
I just remember kind of being disappointed that, like, because in the end, she, like, made up with Tarantino and they're both fine now. So it was like, so why'd you have to let a guy release this in, the, like, a, you know, in a Me Too article where, like, you're just kind of throwing Tarantino under the bus.
It was
a disappointing thing. I was like,
was
but
also,
you,
well,
you
was,
guys are friends, so why even go through with this? Like,
that's why it was like upsetting. Anytime you hear like, oh, I think these guys are good friends, and then you find out like, oh, wait, this is like a weird relationship.
Imagine if you and me were like totally fine, but I go, Joey
picked me up
fine,
and tossed me one
but
night.
But by the way, it is check out the New York Times this week. I go, Joey, I love you, buddy. But also, read the New York Times this week. You're
it was also
you look like a criminal.
I really painted a bad picture.
I painted a really bad picture of you. Anyway, you want to get hammered tonight? We're friends.
Exactly. But also in that same article, she had that whole take about how he spit in her face.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah, that too, yeah.
Where so yeah, there was that scene in Kill Bill where you know, what's the guy's fucking name? The cowboy hat guy.
I don't even remember.
No, he's Mr.
Michael Madsen?
Yeah, Michael Madsen. So in Kill Bill, Michael Madsen has to, like his character spits chewing tobacco into
her
face.
Right.
And so, like, the only way to make that look real, like, I guess they could create a device where it was fake chewing tobacco and, like, mixed with water, and they squirt it out of a device. I guess that's that I'm saying it, maybe it could.
Go ahead, but honestly, why is anyone complaining? Like, you're doing a ridiculous thing. You play pretend. You might as well play pretend as hardcore as you can. I would do that just to feel like I did anything with my life.
I would get bukkake if Tarantino asked me.
I am not kidding. I would literally let 9 men come on my face for the sanctity of a scene in a Tarantino movie.
No, if Tarantino asked me like to get
and
bukkake.
I've done it before for Brazzers.
I've done it for close to nothing.
And I never got paid. I'm still waiting on the paycheck. No, but
I've been
like
emailing
those,
them. Yeah,
it's one of those things where it's like you fucking. Do you understand how crazy you're famous? You're in this famous movie. It's going to be a huge deal. Make it as realistic as possible and just get spit in the face. Who fucking cares?
Like, it's honestly like it's not that crazy. Like
I showed up to that
when
show.
When you kiss somebody, it's like, oh yeah, you're exchanging spit. It's like you got Tarantino spit. It's like
there's
you
no
know,
COVID.
You can trust him. You know he doesn't have like a disease, and also you can't like let you know. It's not that.
I showed up.
You
to
agreed
that.
By the way, both situations, you agreed to drive the car. You agreed to get spit on. Now you're coming out of the woodwork and saying like
you did do it.
This seemed weird. Now
he's an asshole. Now it's like he's trying to fucking make
she
a movie.
She was,
and you know, famous because of his fucking movies. You're famous because of his genius in Pulp Fiction and Kill Bill. Like, yeah, he makes some mistakes, and I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry about your shoulder.
I guess.
Whatever.
I don't know if he was somebody. Yeah, I don't know.
Somebody.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it was him, but he feels horrible about it, and he apologized, and it was like, why does there need to be some big, like, fucking, you know, hit piece out on
it? It was a hit piece.
It was a hit piece.
She clearly coordinated with a journalist and did a hit piece.
When I showed up to the NBC show, I have no respect for myself. I'm happy to do anything. I was expecting to get thrown through a table. I was like, this is going to hurt.
Yeah.
But who am I? I'm lucky to be here. I didn't know they'd have a stunt guy for me and whatever.
That's the attitude you want somebody to have if you're making the thing. And then, you know, 10 years later, 20 years later, they come back and go, that pisses me off.
In 20 years, I'm going to fucking me too. That old fucking, I'm going to be like, my elbow still clicks.
I think you got a lawsuit.
We do. We all know I do.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting. I'm going to bide my time. About 10 years, hit up the New York Times, put out a hit piece on my good friend who got me in the show. But yeah, no, I don't know. I just remember being a little disappointed that day when that article came out because I wasn't disappointed. I was like, oh man, maybe Tarantino is, you know, a bit of a psycho and he deserves to have this written about him or whatever. But then you find out like a week later that they're completely in good graces with each other. They're friends. They've made up and they made up over that like long before that article came out. So it's like, so what? So why'd you put out the article if you guys already made up over it?
No, people are way too casual about putting a statement out that will potentially ruin somebody's life. So if you're going to do that, you should now at least be aware of you've just done like a very volatile, potentially career-ending statement. So then, if you're willing to do that, why are you so willing to forgive them so fast?
Exactly. Right. It's kind of a new type of, like, communism.
Well, because you can get away with it by, you go, well, I'm excusing myself from that act because it's sort of activism. Right? I'm raising awareness about the unfair treatment of women in film, and so that was why I came out with that. But it's like, Jesus Christ, I mean, guy's supposed to be your friend. I thought.
He's also more than just your friend. He's also the guy that, like,
Made your career. If he hadn't put her in those movies, she would be gone and forgotten.
People have Pulp Fiction posters everywhere, and she's on the cover of it. It's, like, extremely... It's one of the most famous posters ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're gonna, you know, whatever. It's like, hey, I haven't really seen you in anything.
That's a true betrayal.
Haven't really seen you Uma Thurman in anything by any other director.
Yeah.
Because maybe you only work when Tarantino comes a-calling. So why is there this...
Yeah, you were in Paycheck with Ben Affleck.
Yeah, I wonder why I don't see that poster everywhere. Doesn't seem the same level for your fame. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not trying to be a dick. I sympathize with, like, the pain or whatever, but it's like, just keep it behind the scenes. Like, why, if you really do love the guy... Why is that? What is with this culture of like, but I still went public with him? Like, hundreds of, you know, millions of people
also
are now going to use this against you.
You also have.
And we're friends. But we're friends, though.
Yeah, we're friends. Yeah. And you have the agency. You're an adult. Like, when they made Kill Bill, how old was she? She was like 30 something, right?
Yeah, she was kind of old, right?
She was like 35. Yeah, like, that was one of the things. She was an older actress. She was like 35, I think, at least. Maybe a little older. But so you have the agency, you're mature enough to make the decision like, oh, you want me to do this scene where I'm the stunt woman? It's like, you are mature enough, you've been in the biz long enough, you can say, you know, I'm actually not comfortable in that car at that speed.
Right.
Let's figure out a different way to do it. It's like you agreed to do it.
Also, and also Tarantino feels bad about it. It's not like he was like, who cares? Next, like, do it again. Like, he felt shitty. It just was an unfortunate thing that happened.
You know what should happen?
But
the next thing is going to be Steve-O is going to sue Jackass.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, no, Ryan Dunn's family is going to sue Johnny Knoxville for his drunk driving death.
I mean, listen, no. Steve agrees to have somebody kick him in the nuts. He staples his bag to his legs. He's getting launched into the air in a porta potty. It's like, imagine if he was like, I agreed to do this, but now I actually have like back pain.
He's like, I have arthritis now, and so I'm suing Johnny Knoxville.
Arthritis.
Yeah. I'm excited for the new Jackass. Have you seen the trailer for the new Jackass?
I'm sad that Bam Margera's not in it, but
he's not in it? Oh, because he's just like nuts. Bam Margera's in my alleyway right now.
Well, yeah. Bam Margera was he's
on drugs and shit, right?
He's like it's very sad. He's lost his mind. He's completely lost his mind.
Well, he was best friends with Ryan Dunn.
That sent them really on a tailspin.
I love the whole Jackass crew. I love those guys with all my heart.
That's the only reason I'm bringing this up. If I didn't love them all, I wouldn't even say like, "Oh, I'm kind of sad about." Like, it's actually kind of sad and disappointing.
Yeah.
Like Bam Margera was hilarious.
That's why they have all these celebrities in the new one. I think like Eric Andre. They have like all these like Machine Gun Kelly is in it. But by the way, give Machine Gun Kelly as many concussions as you want. He's not going to know the difference between how he felt before or after. But, at least they're finding people that are like, we'll replace Bam with Pete Davidson.
I mean,
let's give Pete Davidson brain damage. But, yeah, no, I didn't know he's not in it. He's literally not in it because he's just too fucked up.
Yep. There was a discussion where I think, like, Johnny Knoxville's the best guy ever, it sounds like. So, like, when Steve-O was in his peak of drug addiction, Johnny Knoxville was the guy that got him into rehab.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he showed up at his house with, they 5150'd him.
Mm-hmm.
He was sending out emails, apparently, going, like, I'm going to ramp my bike off my roof, and it's an impossible jump. It's a bicycle, and if I die, I die. And Knoxville, like, he was about to do this jump where, like, he would have died for
sure.
Was
it after Ryan?
No.
That behavior? Oh, shit. Well, he was already...
No, I think it was before. It was before. Yeah. And then, so he was just, Tebow was doing nitrous. He was doing every drug. He was doing every drug. Mm-hmm. And he started sending out these things. So Knoxville showed up and goes, like, with like a, we're saving your life kind of situation. And Steve-O went into rehab, and he's been sober ever since. Like, Knoxville saved his life. Like, actual, like, friend saving a friend's life.
Now, Johnny Knoxville sounds like an amazing guy.
He's just like an old fucking hillbilly that has a good heart. Like, he's from a place where it's like, oh, this is what you do for your friends, like, kind of thing.
Yep.
And then Bam started being insane.
Yeah.
Right? And so Knoxville goes, hey, we're doing the new Jackass. You like, let's, you want to meet up and talk about you being like doing it? And then he was like, yeah. So, you know, Bam is being insane. He's getting arrested. He's posting insane videos on Instagram, similar to what Steve-O was doing, where it's like, oh, this guy might die.
Mm-hmm.
And Knoxville was like, all right, you can be in it, but you have to get sober. And Bam was just like, no, I can't do
Bam,
it.
He
just wouldn't do it. So no, he's not in it.
Well, it'll still be good, though. The trailer actually looked funnier than the third one, which I remember not loving that much, the 3D one.
3D, where they're jet skiing out of the pool and
stuff. Yeah, yeah. I just thought it was kind
of
just...
I love all those. I can't remember that one.
Jackass 2 is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
What was the big stunts in that one?
In 2? When Johnny Knoxville gets hit by the ball and he fucking flips.
He gets hit by a bullet
every movie. But the second one is the one where it's like, where they're on the... what's that thing where it's like the weight... It's decided by you putting your weight down on it, so they're all on this like big swing set thing,
and a ball's running around, and it mauls
Steve-O, and it mauls Johnny Knoxville, and And then also that when Johnny Knoxville gets on that fucking that rocket, it shoots out, and he almost could have died.
Oh, it explodes out of the
side. And if his side was any closer to it, he would have literally been impaled.
Yeah, they said if it was like a what, like 6 inches away.
He would have been killed.
Yeah.
He would have been killed in the movie.
Yeah. No,
he's insane. He's the, like, nobody's done anything for entertainment more than Johnny Knoxville. Now, literally, tell me anybody besides, like, Buster Keaton that's cared about now, entertaining more than Johnny Knoxville.
This is now becoming a podcast where we recommend other things to watch that are not. But
it's not a hate watch. It's a love watch today.
But so,
even though Impeachment, the Monica Lewinsky story, bit of a hate watch.
Well, you know, they cut out the pedophile plot. But so, they have Knoxville's whole thing. He was inspired by Evel Knievel.
Mm-hmm. And cartoons. He loved, like, Yosemite.
Wacky, exactly.
Shit.
Like, yeah, the coyote runs off the top.
He like, actually
down.
Was trying to do that in real life.
He's like, well, this is funny in cartoons. I think, imagine people doing this. But so, he made a documentary about Evel Knievel. He produced it, and he, like, does interviews in it. But he does probably like 5 minutes of total interviews. It's very focused on Evel Knievel. And I don't, like, do you know anything about Evel Knievel?
Broke every bone in his body. I know
so
that.
So that's what everybody knows. But you watch the doc, and you can see, like, Evel Knievel, he was suicidal. Like, I don't, like, when a UFC fighter breaks their leg, they're changed forever. It gives them a fear that they can't overcome. Or, you know, like a basketball player or, you know, an NFL guy has a serious injury, changes them, right? Evel Knievel would have, he'd break every bone in his body. He'd try to ramp over like a helicopter and 16 buses and he'd crash and break all his bones. He'd literally just be, like, in a body cast, like a fucking idiot for, you know, 6 months. He'd get right out of it, and then he would just do another one.
Yeah.
It's some kind
of... I can't believe that guy was suicidal.
Well, no. I'm claiming he was suicidal based on how he... his behavior. But Johnny Knoxville saw that, and he's like... And by the way, man, I see that, and I go, there's something admirable about that.
Same. I somehow love it. I envy it. I envy that nihilism.
It's that and nihilism has like a bad rap, so I don't even want to call it that, but it's this ability to not be too attached to life.
Yeah.
Which sounds dark, but it's not, because it's like when people start getting too desperate about being alive, it's like that's when you start seeing real dark shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's when people start.
Nothing more pathetic than somebody that loves being alive.
Well, no, listen. That's the conundrum is, listen, you should love being alive, but you should also not be so attached to life that when things start forcing you to choose between.
It ruins you.
It ruins you, exactly.
Yeah.
So you've got, you know, this guy who's basically just saying, like, this is a weird microcosm of a man who's making a decision to say, life is beautiful and I love it and I've got a beautiful family, I got a wife and kids, but I feel like ramping my motorcycle over all these buses right now. And if I die, I die. I guess it's just old school bravery.
Yeah, it is. It's the guy at the party that jumps off the roof to entertain everybody, and
it's that
he doesn't
steroids.
Die on steroids, yeah, like, you know, yeah, because
exactly. He's doing something that's actually semi.
But what Jackass is great, it wouldn't be great if it was just them doing that. The reason it's great is because they do have some comedic minds, and they always like dress in a funny outfit, and there's like kind of a bit within the
but none of that
like Johnny Knoxville dresses the old man, like when he goes and steals in the first Jackass and he keeps stealing stuff as he's being escorted out and he like keeps putting stuff in his pockets. You have to he has like comedic timing, like he's not just some dipshit that's willing
Knievel. Evel Knievel was a very charismatic person, and but guess what, man, like I love Jackass more than anybody, and you know, maybe Johnny Knoxville could be, you know, if he had a talk show or a, you know,
But he was a comedian. He's not going to be like Conan.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I know.
Where it's like,
well, they tried to put him in movies as an actor and shit, and it never really worked out. But like, he's
I think
great.
He did okay in a couple. But my point is, yes, they have like a unique friendship. But the only reason you care about how funny they are together as people and is because they're also like risking their lives.
Yes, that is the excitement of. I mean, when the first Jackass came out, it blew people's minds because they were like, they really did that? Like, I remember they were in that golf cart and they fly and they land on their heads, and every normal person knows, like, you could die.
No, Knoxville's snoring in that, like, in that golf cart thing. Like, they literally run up to the golf cart. It's upside down. He's out cold.
Yeah. I mean, amazing. Nobody's done more for comedy than the Jackass guys.
I think they're funnier than every comedian.
They're funnier than every comedian ever. And all, it goes to show that, you know, no matter how well your joke is written, just get kicked in the nuts and thrown in front of traffic.
It's Idiocracy, but it's like, sadly, that's the universe.
That's the universe, folks.
It's way funnier than every comedian. I'm sorry, man. It just is.
Yep. The possibility of death will always be funnier than your fucking, you know, takedown of society. Or like, truly, a fart will always be funnier than you, like, thinking you came up with a great observation. Truly. And that's what we've been trying to get across to you tonight.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Fart jokes reign supreme, and Jackass is better than Citizen Kane. Goodbye.
Send it on that.